Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all hear me out. Express it, express yourself. Express yourself. Come on, y'all. Express yourself. Express yourself. Express yourself.
And that is the legendary Charles Wright, the founder of the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band. And we're going to do just that. We are going to express ourselves. So again, welcome to Expressions of Blackness live on Tri-Family Channel. Today is February 18th, 2024. Special debut is brought to you by AllenTBlack.com. Hi, I am Beverly Black, and it's an honor and a privilege to be here today. Tri-Family Channel and Expressions of Blackness are Gumbo for the Soul International Family brands created by yours truly, All Rights Reserved. We will expound on antiquated history of blackness, ranging through the ages of ancient Egypt to Moors and Masons, right on through slavery, sharecropping, World War II, Jim Crow, the Black Renaissance, the Civil Rights Movement, the Black Panther Movement, and the Black Lives Matter Movement. And we can see greatness and great struggles in all its forms. We are a chosen hue of greatness, geniuses, and contributors to the functions of society through untold inventions stolen and realized. We are overcomers, fighters, and the go-to demographic when a nation is failing or falling or in need of resuscitation. Black folk have and are always on the front line, and our unique expressions of blackness is the reason. So get ready for a deep dive discussion. But before we get started, let's hear a word from our sponsor. And I am going to cue that up. Now, as this is one word from our sponsor, and then we're going to hear the audio. But as is the case with each of us, I have experienced many twists and turns along the road of life, but each and every step along that road has led me to this point in life to humbly say that I am an author, but most of all, to be able to say that I am a Christian author, to me, is the most important thing of all. Allen T. Black. Let's go to that commercial from our sponsor.
In our lives every day, we are faced with difficult challenges that overwhelm us, that take a lot out of us emotionally, mentally, and physically. There are so many things that we can't control. Being held down by the struggles of life, we seek a transformation and a need to connect to the Lord, trusting in Him to complete us and to direct and lead us in the right path. From song lyricist and Christian author Allen T. Black comes his latest book, Just a Closer Walk, sharing the story of a journey that is sure to resonate with each reader. Just a Closer Walk is the third book for best-selling Christian author Allen T. Black. For more information, please visit allentblack.com. That's allentblack.com.
And Allen T. Black is also the author of In the Spirit Intended and Here I Am, Lord. That's allentblack.com. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, our sponsor on this special debut of Expressions of Blackness, Mr. Allen T. Black, no relation. Hi, Allen, how are you?
Ms. Beverly, how are you doing? And first of all, let me thank you for that amazing introduction. I was listening to that, and I found myself actually tying back to the opening song that you were playing by Brother Charles White, Express Yourself. And I thought about the fact that when he did that song, because this gets into the musical side of Alan T. Black, I thought about the fact that, you know, that song, those lyrics right there are so synonymous with who each of us are as Black people in this world, not America, but in this world, because we have continually, from day one of our existence, made it a point to express ourselves, our talents and our gifts in so many different ways that we can just sit back and just really marvel at the greatness that we as a people possess and that we continue to build on. Even as we go into the 21st century, we head to the 22nd century, or whatever the case may be, if we just keep rising up, we continue to go forward based on where God's going to lead us. And I'm very happy about that. I'm very proud to say that I've been blessed to be a part of this journey as we keep moving forward.
Well, now, amen to that. And if you weren't realizing your genius and your greatness, we would not have such an illustrious introduction to give you. So thank you for walking in your truth, and especially, you know, being the author that you are, and specifically the Christian author, that emphasizes a lot. Religion, or should I say spirituality, also is the foundation of our safety net as a people. We have always relied upon our faith through struggles and adversity. So to really piggyback off of what you're saying in terms of expressing ourselves and overcoming and being worldwide known for our unique expressions of Blackness, in the sense that we've always relied upon a foundation of spirituality, but we've always also relied upon our unique ability of creation and expression. And so it is in that vein that I would like to enter into this discussion. Your first realization of your Blackness and your creative expression comes by way of what influences, you know, people that have inevitably bore the responsibility of opening doors, Harry Belafonte, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Lorraine Hansberry, you know, people that doors were closed to, Ella Fitzgerald, just the blatant disregard for such greatness due to the color of our skin has been one thing, but we have continued to soar. But what expressions of your own experience do you attribute your influencers, and who do you attribute your influencers to that greatness?
Beverly, I think as much as anything, when I am looking at the influences for me, in terms of tapping into my creativity and the genius that each of us possess, it definitely began in my home environment. And I'm looking back now, and I'm starting to really understand the influences that immediately that my parents had on me in terms of shape and define over a period of time who I become. I'm going to go left field here for a reason, and I'm hoping you understand this, but I can remember I'm growing up in the 60s. And so for me, the last name Black was definitely something different to carry around. And here's what I'm saying, Beverly, because this is the 60s. And so this was a period of time when growing up, at least here in the Midwest, I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. I can't speak for other parts of the country. But to grow up with the last name of Black, that was kind of taboo, because in those days, I can recall the people around my neighborhood and the people I grew up with for the most part, did not seem to be referred to as being black. And that was kind of a taboo subject in terms of how that was approached. But I can remember that growing up with that last name and knowing that I was going to be called, hey, black, what are you doing, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents would, you know what, that's your last name. That's a part of who you are. You don't run from it. You're going to embrace it and go ahead with life the way you need to. And so that was important for me growing up, to know
mm-hmm.
that last name, even though it might have been taboo to some people, it was something that my sister and I learned to embrace growing up. And so we wore it proudly and we carried it with us. And then when I'm looking back now, I'm really beginning to see not just my parents, the neighborhood and the environment that I grew up in. We're talking about in the 60s, all through the 60s, growing up in an environment where it was that village. And that village is really so critical for each of us as we are growing and we are evolving from a young child into a young adult, a young male, young lady, whatever the case may be. And so I'm looking back now, Beverly, and I'm really seeing the village that
mm-hmm.
I came from and the fact that so many people in that village continue to pour into me on a daily basis. I always look at our expressions of our blackness. I look at it in two ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's macro perspective, and the macro perspective is what I call the national, the international influences that we had growing up or that I had growing up. If it was, say, Dr. King, if it was Malcolm X, if it was, say, the Black Panther Party, NAACP, those are the things that are macro, which for me were on a national scale.
Mm-hmm.
And those were important and continue to be. But I began to realize a few years ago, it's the micro influences. And what I mean by micro are the people who are not necessarily national or international, but those are the people who I'm directly tied to, my family, my relatives, the village that continue
mm-hmm.
to pour into me, like I said before, on a daily basis. And
mm-hmm.
so I'm looking back and I really begin to realize, Beverly, it has been the connection or relationship between the macro influence and the micro influence that's helped me to continue to move forward in this journey that we call life. I look at what I had to experience growing up and how I learned to deal with it. I think now back to the conversation I heard the elder men talking about growing up and growing up at a time when they were denied so much and they had
mm-hmm.
to endure so much. And yet it didn't break their spirit. And so I'm beginning to realize that maybe subconsciously that I picked up, as I hope everybody else did, the fact that you don't throw in the towel, that you learn to accept that it's going to be hard, but that does not mean it's impossible for you to continue to strive to reach the goals that you're going to reach. I can remember hearing a story. One time my father, Beverly, was in the hospital, and it really hit me. He was in the hospital. I was visiting him. And he was talking about, this was maybe about 1949, 1950, before I was born, of course. And he was talking about going to see Jackie Robinson play at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the pride that they felt to see someone like Jackie Robinson breaking the color line in baseball. But he also talked
mm-hmm.
about the fact that he was in St. Louis, and as far as the black people were concerned, they all congregated in one area out in the blazing hot sun, he said, which was brutal. But he said in that entire nine innings, no one complained because they were so connected to what Jackie Robinson was doing that they figured whatever it was, they were going to endure it to be there for that moment in history. And what he was telling me, he said, you know what, no matter what happened, we just didn't give up. And now I'm beginning to realize that's what's been instilled in me by my parents, by my grandparents, is the fact that, yeah, we're going to deal with a lot, Beverly, as we all do. If you don't, you have to keep pressing on. And that is really what starts the genesis of the expression of our blackness, is the fact that we internalize consciously and subconsciously those values that we hear from our elders and from our village, and they serve as the foundation for those things that we're going to build on in order to really be successful and to reach the goals and objectives that we have in this life.
Well, I really, really agree with your dissertation, I should say, and I'm glad that we are recording so that I can go back to the archives, because that was a really rife expression. Now, I remember growing up as well, having the last name Black, and just like yourself, we out in society weren't received so well as far as saying we were Black. You know, growing up, you know, Negro and N-I-G-G-A or N-I-G-G-E-R, and then being a Black person with the last name Black, you know, you had to get used to it. But just like you were saying, our elders, that village, those that reinforced the values and the pride and the ability to walk with their heads up, they absolutely knew what the fight was. And we had no clue, no idea. But their influences and their bringing us along the way through life with that pride and with that with the high principles of not being demoralized because of our color, because of our station and position in life, that level of strength and empowerment certainly does come from the village, evoked in our home life through our parents and grandparents, and it's so relatable. I can remember in school, you know, the snickers when in roll call, Black Beverly, mm-hmm. because your name, last name came first. And yep. It wasn't the cringe because I was proud. It was the snickers that would take the edge off the pride and try to cut, you know, prick the heart. So, but by God's grace, our elders, that village, those influencers, and thank you for bringing up the late, great Jackie Robinson, my first book, dropped in 2003, The Recipe for Literacy, Gumbo for the Soul, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. And my father, I remember, bless God, rest in peace, I remember him thanking me for including Jackie Robinson in my installation, as a poem that I wrote was my installation to the anthology, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. And coming to this day and time of you and I debuting on Expressions of Blackness, and to bring up Jackie Robinson, you know, you bring up a period of time in this country and in this world, really, where he absolutely knew he was going to catch hell and go through hell. And he did it to soften the blow of the hell the rest of us would catch.
Exactly.
You know, people wanted him to quit. You know, his wife, she stood by his side. She, you know, endured, you know, the racial slurs and the threats. You know, his career was not without threats, because that was that period of time where you did not express your genius and your gifting on such a grand scale, that it intimidated the white counterpart. And this is something we deal with all the way through the ages of the eras of time that were the aforementioned in this introduction of Expressions of Blackness, all through time and of the current status. We have black businesses that are being ostracized. We have black farmers that are being duped by being sold black seeds. So by the time they realize they don't have a crop that's going to come up, it's too late for harvest. There's just so many things that we as a people have to endure. And it's really because, again, like I said at the beginning of this show, it really goes back to, you know, we are a chosen hue of greatness, geniuses, and contributors to the functions of society through untold inventions, stolen and realized. Now, with that, we're going to take this quick commercial break, and you will have the mic to respond right after this brief message from another one of our sponsors who will be on the show next Sunday, February 25th.
Blessings, everyone. This is Mike Oley. Want to know more about Black history? My dear friend, Dr. Maxine Bryant, boldly takes her audience on an insightful journey covering information about the Black diaspora that's often left out of the history books. From the greatness of ancient Africans who invented toothpaste and performed C-sections to the survival ingenuity of captured and enslaved Africans to blacks here in the United States whose inventions included traffic signals and color monitors for desktop computers. Dr. Bryant shares accurate truths. Consider this for a dynamic, thought-provoking, an inspirational experience, I encourage you to retain Dr. Maxine Bryant for your next workshop or conference. All you got to do is contact Patricia and Maltz today to book Dr. Maxine Bryant. 612-685-1258. 612-685-1258. Oh, by the way, tell him Mike Oley sent you.
Welcome back live on Expressions of Blackness. We are black and we are proud. I'm Beverly Black. I'm blacker and prouder because I have with me Mr. Alan T. Black, no relation, delving into his own experiences to help us enlighten the masses on this debut show of Expressions of Blackness live on Tribe Family Channel. Now, go ahead, Mr. Alan T. Black. You have the floor in response to the aforementioned dialogue from me.
You know what? I was ready to go there until you went and played that snippet of James Brown. And I'm telling you, I remember personal testimony. I remember when Mr. James Brown released that song, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. I don't remember the year. I think it was 67, 68, somewhere in there. It might have been 68, right in that time period. And what I recall, Beverly, at least in this city where I'm at, there was an awakening of a consciousness that, you know what, we are black and we are proud. We don't have to shy away from it. We are black and we are proud. And I can remember just personally, it was like an awakening of a consciousness for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, being black, there's nothing better than that in the world. And I can just recall there was a sense of openness. The mind began to just race and embrace so much more. And I was 12 or 13 at that time, and it was really, for me, a life-changing moment. Now, because of my lyrical background and my heavy, heavy devotion to music,
mm-hmm.
I often look at my own history and the history of where we are through the lens of music. And for me, I think about as much as anything at that period, about 1968 or so, when James Brown released that song, it just seemed to awaken something and us locally. I don't know about the rest of the country at that time because, like I said, I was only 12 or 13. But it changed something. It really did. It was all of a sudden, man, we are proud. We are black. The froze are coming forth. The black power symbol was coming up. And it was like we began to embrace the fact that, you know, we are special and we're unique and we need to run with this thing. I remember that more than anything. And that's been 50, 60 years ago, but I remember it like yesterday.
You know, thank you so much for sharing your experience, because that's when you can say we as a people flip the page. You know, our black experience went from being called Negro, nigger, well, excuse me, nigger, Negro, nigger, whichever order it was realized in, and the degradation of such descriptions for a proud people was something that stared us in the face on the daily. And when James Brown released I'm Black and I'm Proud, you know, we're going through eras of time, coming out of the Civil Rights era, going into the Black Panther era, and we're turning the page. Like he said, we'd rather die on our feet than keep living on our knees.
On our knees.
So it was definitely a page turner in the era of time in society. So, and like you so eloquently described, those froze came out, the Afro pics, the dashikis, the elephant leg pants, the platforms, the music, and we continue to roll and realize the beauty. And the here again, the different expressions and hues of our blackness, you know, because we were also, you know, marginalized and racist within our own race. You know, we can go all the way back, house slave, Negro, field slave, house slave, you see. So we can come up through time, you know, light skin, you know, blacks, dark skin blacks, you know. And so that song empowered us to be able to accept ourselves in all the varieties of our beauty and blackness. So now let's move towards the era of time of the civil, well, let's move to the era of time of the Black Panther Party. We are realizing established programs in existence today that were started by the Black Panther Party. How do I know? Because I had the honor, privilege, and pleasure of speaking directly to the founder of the Black Panther Party, Bobby Seale. I knew, I had left him a voicemail a few years back, and I hadn't saved the number in my phone, but I knew from the area code that that was him. And I was over the top. And he took me to class for 90 minutes. There were times when I could have blacked out when he discussed all of the different points of why they did what they did and their, you know, operations, and all the way from the uniforms to the methods that were used. But the establishment of the lunch programs, the breakfast programs, and the senior meals, and, you know, different programs that actually took care of health programs, health screenings, and, you know, the Black Panther Party are the catalyst to these kinds of things that are still in operation today. The food lunch program at school, yeah. So a child can start their day with a breakfast. You know, a senior food box delivery for a someone that's elderly and shut in. Health screenings. We're going through eras of time where this is past the Tuskegee experiment. Now we're just outright marginalized because of our color and can't get proper medical screenings and inoculations, what they would have been called back then, vaccinations. And so we have a lot to be thankful for that era of time. But when he also described Huey Newton's role as an attorney, see, because we were made to believe that he was just a you know, long rifle-carrying thug starting trouble. See, the marginalization of us as a people, as we seek to empower ourselves with our own expressions of blackness, he ran it down to me, how they did traffic stop monitoring legally armed with their right to carry, standing at a legal distance. How did they know it was a legal distance? Because Huey P. Newton was an attorney. He was their legal go-to. And when he continued speaking on Mr. Newton, rest in peace, whose brother I did meet back in the late 80s, early 90s, rest in peace to him too. When he continued to talk about Huey Newton, I started to visualize Huey sitting in the wicker back chair with the black beret and holding the, you know, he was saying how Huey liked the long, you know, rifle. And I could have just blacked out in that moment. I am talking to the founder of the Black Panther Party describing this poster that is synonymous with black light posters and, you know, here again, that era of time of soul power and expression of black power and, you know, black is beautiful and I'm black and I'm proud. And it just took me all the way back. It was a nostalgic moment. It was a teaching moment. And I consider myself having gone to school at the feet of Bobby Seale, including his own experience of being bound and gagged in the courtroom as his own representative. Now, you go figure how you're supposed to represent yourself if the judge orders you to be gagged and bound. So we have these eras of time, like James Brown's song, I'm Black and I'm Proud. And that marched us into a whole nother era. Now, would you like to expound on anything in that same vein?
Yeah, I would, because what we are seeing when you see meals, breakfast for children before school, when you're seeing, like you said, the seniors who are being taken care of, even with the Panthers, and I know they were sharing this with you, Mr. Seals was sharing this with you, after school programs, things of that nature, there's nothing new under the sun. And I say that, Beverly, because this was something the Panther Party was doing mm-hmm. back in the '60s. And to do this in a manner whereby they were being proactive and they weren't leaving it in the hands of somebody else to come and do it for them. They took the initiative to step out on faith and said, this needs to be done. And if we don't do it, who's going to do it? And so I think what's always fascinating with American history is the fact that history can and has always been polluted to the extent that when people want a certain story told, they would tell it their way. But that does not necessarily mean it's being told correctly and 100% accurately.
Mm-hmm.
The party of the Black Panther Party, the focus has always been on the negative. And the negative has been the focus in order to discredit what it is they were about. Because as much as anything, the establishment in the 60s at that time, as I'm sure Mr. Steele was telling you, they were terrified about the fact that here was a group of strong Black men who said, you know what, we're not going to wait for you to do it. We'll take the bull by the horns and we're going to do it ourselves. And when people stand up, or as Martin referred to, when they get up off of their knees and they said, I'm going to stand, I'm going to make it happen, to certain people, let's be real about it, that becomes a threat. And I've always found myself thinking, what are you threatened by? By the proposition of what people are doing, or the level of guilt that you're carrying to conceal your fault in terms of how things are and why they are the way they are? It might be a combination of the both, Beverly. But for the Panther Party, now we're seeing the history being told correctly. And I realize now, and if we're in Black History Month, I remember seeing something on social media a long time ago, maybe 2 years ago, and it still remains true today. And someone said that, you know what? History is not there for you to like. It's there for you to learn, acknowledge, and say, this is how it really happened. It's not to be manipulated. It's not your story. It's the story, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But we have not reached a point in society where we're ready to do that. Because when you tell the whole truth, the whole truth comes out. People don't want the whole truth to come out because it can make a lot of us look bad if we're going to be really honest and be transparent about it. So I think about the Panther Party at that time and what they really were doing. And it's a documented fact that the establishment, by virtue of the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover at that time, had made the Panther Party their target to basically discredit and ultimately destroy because of the perceived threat, for whatever reason they felt the Panther Party represented to America. And here's the great irony about this too. The Bible, if we go back to our spiritual roots, talks about to feed the hungry, to take care of the widow and those less fortunate. Isn't that what the Panthers were doing to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a country that says it has Christian values, shouldn't you endorse that instead of discrediting it and tearing it down? What does that make us? Because that's what they were doing, feeding the hungry and looking out for the less fortunate. That's what God would expect of them. And that's the 100% truth.
Now, you have fed a mouthful, and I appreciate this rife discussion. You said something that really hit home, and let me hold on. Let me write this down. And, you know, the you mentioned something about the silent protest, right?
Yes.
Okay. Pin that. We're going to take a quick commercial break. You are listening to Expressions of Blackness. I am Beverly Black, the CEO of Tribe Family Channel and Gumbo for the Soul International, all family brands of the same. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Brooklyn speculative fiction author Kathy Wright Lewis penned and published Mariah C., Why Hope Lives Behind Project Walls, Passion's Pride, Return to the Dawning, Mamarelli and Mamarelli's Lessons, children's book series, and a host of poetry anthologies and short stories. Her allegorical, Afrofuturistic works both uncover the history of African Americans in New York City, honors the African ancestors who built the city, and those who fought for equality,
amid centuries of disenfranchisement and massacres. Students in mind, Wright Lewis strategically embedded core knowledge of language skills that ordinarily prevent urban students from mastering language and writing skills within her text. She also uses language and culture that connect students of color and invite them on journeys about their lives. For over 35 years, Wright Lewis served Brooklyn youth, adults, and teachers as a high school English teacher, mentor, UFT teacher trainer, and English professor. She continues to serve students through Megar Evers College Center for Black Literature as program director of Re-envisioning Our Lives Through Literature, and as executive director of her nonprofit, Power in the Pen Writing Workshop, Inc., Kathy Wright Lewis, where culture and literacy and spirit meet.
That is another anthem song. That's by the Shylocks. Give more power to the people. And that has always been the case because we've been denied such. Now, where we left off, Alan, here on Expressions of Blackness, is you mentioned something about a silent protest. Anytime black people protested, even in silence, even in prayer, it has been refuted, and some of you might not know, but it's also against the law. A silent protest anywhere is a threat to the natural order of white supremacy. Now, if you don't believe me, do your research. My mentor, Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson Jr., is the leader of the Tougaloo Nine, led, trained, and mentored by the late, great Megar Wiley Evers. He is 86 years young. He is also a historian of our culture as a civil rights icon, being the leader of the Tougaloo Nine and having gone through that period of the fight and the struggle. In our readings, we have amassed a library between ourselves of hundreds of books. And in our readings, it may have been when we were reading either Malcolm X or Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that we came across the information on this being actually written in law. And it is the J. Edgar Hoover era that you spoke of, Alan. So I just wanted to bring that bit of knowledge, and let me back it up. Let me back up what I'm saying. A silent protest is a direct threat to the natural order of white supremacy. January 6th was not a threat enough to see one arrest to the chaos that threatened the democracy of this country that we call America. But yet, when the congressman kneeled quietly and prayed in the rotunda the next day, he was arrested. And that was a silent protest. And he was arrested. Now, my point is proven. And anybody that is within the sound of my ears that does not believe me, your head is under a rock. I'm sorry, because you have to go back and relive it and review it and see it for yourself. Everyone has had to have seen that take place in our not too distant history. so or not too long ago history. So I just wanted to make that point. Now, we are coming up on the last 15 minutes of the show, and this is what happens when you are having a rife conversation with a great guest, and we're going to take our last commercial at this time, and we're going to change lanes, but let me give you, Alan, the opportunity to respond if you have anything in that vein.
Speaking about what you said, Ms. Beverly, before we go to break, I would just say to the audience, always keep in mind that a system of thinking and trying to exist that is rooted in deceit, dishonesty, and hatred does not give up its base of power peacefully. It will always fight to the bitter end to maintain what they perceive as right, even though they are wrong 100%. That's never going to change.
It's never going to change. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he also expressed power does not concede to a demand. Power does not concede to anything but a demand.
Thank you.
See, so when you are, you can't ask for respect. You have to absolutely demand it and command it. I command respect. You won't be in my presence of disrespecting me unless something's going to happen. We're not going to go into that. We're going to go to commercial break right here on Expressions of Blackness with Alan T. Black, our sponsor and our special guest speaker. I'm Beverly Black, the creator on Tribe Family Channel.
Revive Funding Solutions is your one-stop shop for all of your funding needs. We provide capital for business, real estate, or personal situations. Our programs include term loans, lines of credit, hard money loans, private money loans, business loans, residential or commercial mortgages, refinancing, and more. Serving clients all over the U.S. and abroad for over 6 years. Reach out to us today to see how we can help you. Minimum funding from $30,000 plus. Send funding requests to bit.ly/funding-link-form or email finance@revive-movement.com. Call or give us a text at 410-575-4356 for details.
And welcome back to Expressions of Blackness. I am Beverly Black. We are live on Tribe Family Channel. This is the Gumbo for the Soul International Family Brand. Now, I am so excited because our sponsor, Alan T. Black, is with me helping to bring forth the right conversation that has to be had. Now, what else has to be had is the conversation about where do we go from here, community or chaos. Now, that was the last speech, I believe, of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., begging, the question. We are still at that question. We are at that point as a black people. Now, the commercial that just played, that was David Newby. He is the CEO of the empowerment movement on LinkedIn, and he's a friend of Tribe Family Channels. The reason why I focus on finance, Alan, is because black people pour $1.5 trillion into this economy, and not $1 circles back into the community and lifts us up out of poverty. We are the world's largest consumer of consumables and don't own the entities that will, here again, lift us up from the poverty levels that we experience. We just saw the attack of the Fairness Fund, a group of black women, two sisters, CEO, CFO, They give out $20,000, which is not a lot of money, but it's a real good leg up if you're trying to go into business. But it's not a lot of money to go after anyone that is trying to give us a leg up in our entrepreneurial endeavors. However, we have GOP members and racist people in this society that did just that. They took the Fearless Fund to court. They accused the Fearless Fund of being anti-affirmative action. In other words, by helping black people, you're discriminating against white people. Now, like I said, $20,000 to help black businesses get their footing and get that foundation that is needed. It's not a lot of money in terms of foundational building for business. So to have the attack launched, it shows you, it's proof that they want to quell your greatness for fear of the very things that we are capable of, and that is massive success. We can look at our contributions to society, going back to the opening that I gave in this show. We come in many different hues of greatness, genius, and contributors to the functions of society through untold inventions, stolen and realized. We come from sharecroppers that had to fashion instruments to make their work easier, who, if they're doing the work, they're the ones inventing these instruments. But who comes along and steals and creates and steals the patent, but doesn't know how the instrument functions? So we need to talk about how we can, where do we go from here, chaos or community, in terms of how do we start to amass the wealth that we pour into this country. So I want to hear your take on the fact that, you know, we have such a great amount of wealth being, you know, the lowest rung on the ladder, darn near still speaking, when it comes to, you know, land ownership, real estate, business. We are just not in the highest demographics. What needs to change, Alan?
Beverly, this is just my opinion that you were, I thought about the fact that there's a spiritual component to this. I have to go back to my roots, where Romans 12:1 talks about a transforming of the mind. And what I mean by that, there has to be a transformation of the thinking process. And the thinking process that, hey, we have within ourselves such vast resources, talents, and gifts that, truth be told, just like Tulsa, Oklahoma, in 1921, we can build with our own communities a system of sustainability where if we don't have to go outside, we don't have to. Not to say that we're discriminating and we're shunning other people, but we are demonstrating by virtue of Tulsa and other Tulsas that have existed for centuries that we have it within us to do this. And you mentioned Dr. King's, one of his final speeches about community or chaos. And I would say to the audience, if we're going to be realistic and be honest, Beverly, out of everything we have endured, we have persevered through 400 plus years of chaos. So the chaos is not capable of stopping us. We have to make that stride and keep pressing on towards the community. We have shown that in spite of all the chaos that's been thrown at us, we're not going anywhere. You're only making us stronger. but by the transforming of our minds, when we really have a deeper understanding of the amount of wealth that we generate within our community, there's no limit to what we could do. Again, Tulsa in 1921 showed that. Other cities, other communities around this world have shown that. When we reach that sense of community and we say, excuse me, hey, we can make it happen everywhere, then we will reach a pinnacle that we've been striving for, that our ancestors have prayed for and they sacrificed for us to get to that point. But again, it has to come down to a transformation of the mind. How do we support our very own? And let's be real about it. In supporting our very own, we have to treat each other with respect and regard when we're patronizing each other. You can't treat us lesser than somebody else just because of the color of our skin as compared to the color of somebody else's skin. Now, I know that's not popular to say, but I'm just speaking truth here because it's Sunday and it's a day to be truthful. Every day is a Sunday.
And you're on Tribe Family Channel, so you can do that.
Thank you.
That's what we do.
So, and I think about the fact that, man, if we really understood, and I'm beginning to sense, there's an awakening of that, and there's a movement which is slowly changing that paradigm where people are starting to say, man, we can do this. We have the ability. We have survived so much in 400-plus years, beginning in 1619, if not before then, to here we are still in 2024, even when they're trying to withhold funds from us.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they're trying to say, well, but you're discriminating against somebody else, and I think to myself, but you didn't have a problem discriminating against us for 400 years. Help me understand the equivalent of that. But again, I'm going to leave that aside for right now.
But I digress,
still,
right?
I digress. But see, like Dr. Maya Angelou said, still we rise. And we're not going to stop rising because the renewing of our mind tells us that, you know what? The past that we come from is the foundation, the prelude to what it is we can become in the future, and we will become, because we will not be stopped.
Well, that is the final word here on Expressions of Blackness by Mr. Alan T. Black, our sponsor and guest speaker. Mr. Alan T. Black will be closing out the show with us on April 28th. Same Tribe Family channel, same Tribe Family number. Now, I want to thank you for bringing such a ripe discussion, helping us to really open up the channels of this discussion, and I will be definitely referring back to this show and the points that you've made here. They are so relevant, and we really have to renew our mind. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and expecting different results. Exactly. And so would the same be in our thinking? Because it's in our thinking that produces our doing. So it goes back to what you said, Alan, the renewing of our mind. And now that is the biblical message this Sunday on Expressions of Blackness. We have to think on a higher level. We have to think on a more unified level as a people, and as a how we move and respond affects us as a community, as a Black community. Now, I'm going to just say this finally. There was a family. There were 19 families that bought up some land together to create their own city. This is the type of thinking that we need to normalize. And there's not a devil in hell that can stop that. You can go after the Fearless Fund, okay, but you cannot legally go after a unified consortium of landowners that have the ability and capabilities of coming together, pulling together, and creating a paradigm shift. That is going to conclude. Yes. Go ahead, Alan, final thoughts before we close out.
Well, you know what? I'm going to go back to, I do believe, your godfather, Dr. Marshall Thompson, and we're going to close out. I'm just going to say, for God's sake, you got to give more power to the people. That's what it's about.
That is true. That is true. And with that being said, Expressions of Blackness proudly broadcast from, is being proudly broadcasted from the Shy Lights Chateau here in Las Vegas, Nevada. So thank you so, so very much, Alan T. Black. This has been a phenomenal debut show. The conversation will continue next, no, not next week, tomorrow. We have Danny Smith Mathis, and she will be our guest speaker sponsor here on Expressions of Blackness. Her grandfather was a Pullman porter, and she has, I believe, other relatives that were either influenced by or a part of the Tuskegee Airmen. And so that will be very interesting. I once represented a Red Tails Tuskegee Airmen, Colonel Richard Tolliver, and he was pivotal in the start of one of our most phenomenal shows, and that is The Woman at the Well. So again, Alan, it's been a pleasure. I do hope that you can tune in tomorrow, and we appreciate your support on the debut of today's show of Expressions of Blackness. Again, our sponsor is alantblack.com, alantblack.com. My brother from another. And thank you again, Alan. You have a blessed rest of your Sunday.
Thank you. Thank you for the honor. You be blessed as well, my sister.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's my pleasure. And we're going to go out with Charles Wright, the founding legendary, the legendary founder of the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band, and someone that I am honored to be able to call a friend. Have a blessed Sunday. We'll see you tomorrow.
Y'all hear me out. Express it, express itself. Express itself. Come on, y'all. Express itself. Express itself. Express itself. Express itself. Express itself. Express itself.
Tribe Family Channel.